And you're very welcome back to the second hour of the Weekend Edition here on Highland Radio with Greg Hughes. And also Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace is in studio with us. Paul, thank you so much for coming up.
No bother, Greg. Good morning.
Now, we talked about the positives, and we're all being about the positives as it relates to Donegal Kerry, because that's what sport is. If we don't enjoy that, we might as well pack it in. But unfortunately, there are people out there who are opportunists and they see this as an opportunity. So I want to have a brief chat with you about what we should be doing in terms of securing our properties, if you don't mind, first, ahead of the game. If we're either going, some people are gathering in houses or pubs, or actually going to the game.
Yeah, well, you'll have a lot of people moving around, Greg, and it's a great occasion. And it's it's the pinnacle of the footballing year as such, and I suppose a lot of people may have travelled up last night. They will be certainly getting going this morning and into the afternoon and the evening and tomorrow morning. But houses will be left vacant, and you're quite right when you say there. You know, whether people are travelling to Dublin to the match, or people are going to the local pub to watch it, or maybe to gather in somebody's house. You know, the weather's still sort of fairly agreeable, maybe a barbecue thing, whatever. So houses will be vacant. So all we would be just saying to people, just think about that. Think that houses are vacant.
Tell
your neighbour if you're heading to Dublin. If you're staying local, keep an eye out for your neighbour. You know, don't forget the elderly people, the people that are living alone, the people that are living in isolated areas, you know, because the criminals, they look at all opportunities. Mm. And it's not that we're advertising for them to get out and about either, but they are out and about. And statistics
and the guards
tell us
will that. Be out keeping their eye out, doing the patrols and what have you.
Yeah.
So it's not a case of it's just the resident and then just the bad guy. You guys are going out doing your patrols
as part of
the weekend
policing plan that comes out every weekend. It's one of the focuses this weekend that we're saying that houses are vacant. If anybody wants to let their local 24/7 station know that they are going off, that's not a problem either. If there's some particular reason that they feel that, you know, they would like their house checked on or whatever, we have patrols moving around. But certainly the houses that are vacant, keep an eye out. You know, just keep an eye out. And if you see something moving around, whether it's a caravan or whatever it is, ring in, let us know. If you have the registration number, even better, because it can eliminate or rule in or rule out.
And don't post on Facebook, I can't believe we all got tickets, we're all heading away.
Well, you know, that will happen,
that's
Greg.
That's what people do, don't
you know,
they?
We see the stuff on Facebook.
With holidays as
well.
We're
in Portugal on our holidays, yeah. Or we're here, there, wherever.
Exactly.
And the photos come back. But look, it's just good neighbourliness, that's all. We have Community Alert up and running around the county and Neighbourhood Watch. We're moving it into the, as you know, the text alert arena now. That'll be stepping up a gear now as we go into the darker evenings, because it is a driver for residential burglaries. So, you know, just keep in mind about your property. You know, even leaving a light on or a radio playing or something can be enough. Thereafter, what we call the craved items, which are the small, valuable items, the laptops, the electronic stuff, jewellery, cash, that sort of thing. And the vulnerable times are between 5 and 11 p.m. Mm-hmm. Funny enough, that's the latest times that we have.
Right.
The rear of your property, the rear of your house, your back door is the vulnerable area that they will target.
And we know and we've proven that if we do keep our eyes out, if we do take a community approach and work closely with the Gardaí, if we don't stop these crimes, we get those that are responsible in a lot of the cases. So
well,
the community approach is working.
Well, the community are the eyes and the ears, and we have to work with them. And, you know, for people then that are going up, just think about the young people and small children. You know, if they do get separated with the big numbers of crowds, maybe the first time people are in the city.
So give us some more specific advice on that then.
Yeah.
So if you are travelling with young people,
you know, everybody nearly has a phone now. You know, make sure that they have the phones. Also be aware that the phone can be the target of the pickpocket.
Yep.
Also the wallets and that. Because some children, it might be the first time they've been in the city and that, and it can be overwhelming when you come in around Croke Park there, you know, the different areas and the different sections and that sort of thing. So try and pick out some sort of a point like the Croke Park Hotel or a statue or something, that if you get broken away from the rest, we'll meet there. That sort of simple stuff. If you're going in the car, again, remember what we talked about, the theft from cars is a high point. as a high point in a crime hotspot at the minute. You know, don't believe in things on display. Don't believe in phones lying around, sat navs. People are probably using sat navs to get into the city, get into handy places. Put that sort of stuff into the boot of the car before you leave.
And don't leave empty phone cases or empty laptop bags as well.
Empty nothing, because they'll see that and then they'll put in the window and the hope of getting something. We're going to have an unprecedented number of people moving. We're going to have a lot of people going up probably to watch it, maybe even if they haven't tickets, just to grab the atmosphere, such as
like Yvonne. That's Yvonne. What's Yvonne's doing?
Well, I did it the last time, the last All Ireland, because I just couldn't get a ticket, and we went up. We had two for the children, and then we ended up getting two just on the day, which happens. But you know, if people are moving around, just the general road safety thing, we would hope that there would.
Well,
be
we'll
no
come
accidents.
On that more specifically. Okay, I just want to mention about the pickpockets as well, because that is a big one. Because you know, it's you know, cities are a different animal to what a lot of people are used to, me included. So you know what, you maybe those habits that you've formed in terms of where you keep your phone hanging out your back pocket or your wallet or what have you, or your purse, you know, just
move the wallet or the purse into an inner pocket or something like that. If you're on the phone and everyone's on the phone now sending Facebook messages and all that sort of thing, the criminals there will watch, have you the latest iPhone 5S, have you the whatever Samsung, whatever it is, they'll look for that and they will walk after you and they will wait until your attention is diverted by meeting somebody, having a big hug or whatever happens, and people be all decked out in their colours. Next thing, phone's gone.
No, I was in a bathroom in Dublin and I had something in my back pocket, wasn't my phone, but I could feel it, someone tapping it.
Yeah.
To ascertain what it was. Yeah. When I presume that was just to determine whether it was worth the risk of stealing it or not.
And you see, you know, there'd be the whole euphoria and the happiness that goes with the whole thing. And like that, that's not just going into the game. That will continue, one lose or draw. Leaving as well, you know, people will still be vulnerable. The ladies with the big handbags, you know, that has everything. Most ladies have everything in their handbags. They have their driving license, their purse, their phone, the keys, all that sort of stuff. So if the criminal can get their hands on the handbag, you know, it doesn't take long to get to Donegal from Dublin too and turn over a house and that sort of thing. And these things do happen.
And what happens invariably, the valuable stuff is taken out of a handbag or whatever, and a lot of people carry out stuff that's personal to them, you know, mementos, and that stuff gets thrown in a skip, like it's worthless, and 15
like
euros taken out of the bag, so you lose everything.
Cards, that sort of stuff.
Right, back onto driving then, because we are a bit tight in time today. So, the information's out there. People know what they should be doing, but we need to be told again what shouldn't we be doing in terms of driving, and making sure that we. In fairness, actually, I must say before we do that, there's two traffic, there's roadworks ongoing in two areas, one in Strabane, one a bit further down, which have been lifted for people travelling down tomorrow, which is nice. But anyway, the general driving advice.
Yeah, well, just tailgating, you know, we probably will have long queues of cars as you get closer to the city, and people get frustrated and they start overtaking and doing stupid things. You know, just think about it. Think about your fellow man. Think about a carload of children going to Dublin for an occasion, and you don't want to be the person to cause hurt or injury to them by driving and driving irresponsibly. You know, we're sharing the road. We need to respect one another. I think the GA have a motto at the minute: give respect, get respect. You know, and that's what it's all about. It's about respecting everybody.
Seatbelts front and back.
Kids in proper restraints. Not using the phone when you're driving. And a simple statistic there, and we're not really into statistics, but a 1% reduction equals a 2% reduction in minor injury, 3% in serious collisions, and 4% fewer fatal. So just keep the speed down, because you're going to allow the 4 hours or whatever to get there, because as you approach the city, it will get heavier. Fatigue is another thing then on the way back. It's as dangerous as being drink driving and such.
Very finally too, listen, we must mention that the morning after the night before, you know, a lot of people maybe won't be able to, will have to get up for work on Monday morning and have to be very conscious of that too, don't they?
They do have to be, because, you know, if you're involved in an accident situation or you come on a checkpoint situation, yeah, you could be over the limit. So you need to be thinking about that. I suppose the other thing in the county, the business owners, we would just ask them, you know, to be vigilant, you know, around their cash security and ensure that, you know, their premises are secure as well, because it's an unprecedented weekend for us. I suppose Kerry have had 34 or 36 of these.
Yeah.
Again, for people who need to contact the guards, Letterkenny 9167100, Buncrana 9320540, Milford 9153060. These are the 24/7. Ballyshannon over your patch is a bit different. It's 0719851102. If you need the guards, these are the numbers to ring. That they have the they're the 24/7 number, and that's they can get contact out to people on the ground if you see something that you're not happy with or you think is out of sync.
And when we interview people here, generally speaking, I know there's a lot of controversy with the resources and this, that and the other, but the one message that seems to come out quite regularly is, well, we phoned the guards and they were out very quickly. So it proves that, you know, if you can get them, do ring, because they will be out.
Well, they're the numbers to ring. If you're ringing the local station, it may be manned, maybe unmanned. This thing of people saying, oh, well, I rang the local station, I couldn't get anybody. If you ring the 24/7, which is the district headquarters number, and if you can't, if you don't know what area you're in, ring Letterkenny and they'll transfer the call out to the relevant area.
Because
we'd rather
game?
Be called. I'm not this time, no.
Okay.
I'm too busy, I'm working and all that, you know.
Very good.
Just a bit like yourself.
Making sure we enjoy it within the... And very briefly... No? Yeah. Okay.
Well, we have our two community policing, Garda Maeve Logue and Garda Anne-Marie McGrath. And they just come up today, just Greg, to see what happens.
And we're not going to get you to speak, you're okay, but what we will do is...
We just like to acknowledge that they're there and that the community policing unit has been put re-established, and the two ladies are going to be going out liaison with business people, with the residents' associations and the neighbourhood watches and that, because it's just something that we're glad to be able to reinvigorate or re-establish in Letterkenny.
That's
so
exactly.
They just said they'll come up this morning.
On golden sands and fields of green, training hard for a winning team. From loose stacks high to mizzen head, we beat them all, we fought, we bled. Cork and Kerry, Tyrone and Down, met their match, chased out of town. We're the best of them all, shout it out. Come on, Donegal! In our hearts and the skill in our boots. Oh, that style can't conceal the fire in our belly and the steel in our heels. Sharp with the rum, blood will rise. We will cut you down with the look in our eyes. We're the best of them all. Shout it out. Come on, Donegal. For all the men that play here are bonded by a trust. It makes a team win a game, it makes a win they must.
With Donegal.
From Malloy's boys, change the laws of fate. The Donegal folk, the Sam the Croak, to answer the call. A team on fire for Sam McGuire's.
Back to Donegal. Murphy up front, now laying the law. McGee and McGee, waiting for the ball. Durkin standing big, minding the post. McHugh and McClin, moving like their ghosts. Thompson to Bradley, McBurney from McGrath. Gallagher jumps, they hit to Kavanagh. McFadden's not a batting and they sweat with McGlynn. There's Casey with Carlissi, they're hungry for the win. Then there's Jim McGuinness, a saint and a scholar. Doesn't do half measures, takes the game by the collar. If you're in, then you win, it's his philosophy. Side by side, we'll turn the tide and make some history. Wouldn't it be great to sit upon the throne, so everyone in Ireland knows where Sam is going. People from the county, standing proud and tall. Everybody shout, Donegal!
Okay, now time for something completely different on the programme. You'll recall the recent Icelandic volcanic eruptions. Well, they didn't release sufficient ash to disrupt air travel, but we understand, and it's claimed, they did release a very large pulse of sulphur dioxide, which has travelled over Ireland. To learn more about this, we're joined on the programme now by Professor John Soto. A very good morning to you.
And good morning to you as well. Thanks for asking me. Yeah.
Is this something that we should be concerned about? Because I have spoken to a number of people who've been out playing golf or out on the beaches or what have you, and they did say that they did get this sulfur-like smell and put it down to maybe some local phenomenon, but you're saying this quite possibly could be from these eruptions.
Well, I don't exactly know the time when you were talking to those people, but it's pretty true to say that round about the 6th of September, the EPA monitoring stations picked up sulfur dioxide at really quite high and very unusual levels. Sulfur dioxide is a gas, as you might know, and it's a precursor to something like sulfuric acid when it's oxidized, and that's the acid rain. But the sulfur dioxide certainly came over from the Icelandic volcano that's called Bárðarbungu, that we've heard quite a lot about recently, and the weather patterns blew it towards the western coast of Ireland. It hit your area, really, went down towards Ennis, but up towards you, and then crossed the country, and then went up again, and people in Norway and Finland also began to smell this rather pungent odour. So I'm not sure when your friends smelt this.
Yeah, it was around about that time, and there was this. Yeah. They reported sort of the smell of rotten eggs. I don't know if that's is what you'd expect them to say.
Well, the sulphur dioxide, when it's strong, is really quite a sort of bitter, acrid, acidic type material. Very often, as a chemist, and I'm a chemist, I almost always say that hydrogen sulfide is rotten eggs.
Mm-hmm.
There's another sulfur compound that's quite important in the atmosphere called dimethyl sulfide, and that's a bit like rotting cabbage. That's not a very scientific way of doing it, but the sulfur dioxide, if it was round about the 6th of September in your area, then that was almost certainly due to sulfur dioxide and may well have had a sort of a burning sensation.
Yeah. Okay, well, if any of your listeners notice that, they can get in contact with us. Professor, is there any danger to this? I know in very concentrated levels perhaps there is, but when it's circulating and perhaps diluted somewhat in the air, does it present any danger?
Not with just the one-off like that. The type of levels that it got to are ones which would be classified as toxic, I guess, if it was for many, many hours or days, and if it happened regularly as an event because of eruptions from the Icelandic volcano. But as it stood, then no, your listeners don't have anything to worry about.
That's good to hear, because this is a chemical that was employed by the Romans. In fact, perhaps could be described and is described as the first chemical weapon.
Well, it wasn't actually by the Romans. The Romans were
the Roman times, I beg your pardon, Professor.
It is in a place that's obviously in the news now as being an area that might be using chemical warfare at this moment. But it was in, I think it's A.D., was it 250, that the Persians were trying to attack a Roman fort that was there.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't get the soldiers out, so they had tunnels underneath it, and they used sulfur and another couple of acidic compounds to make sulfur dioxide, which killed them all off. So that really was a very unusual, but probably the first use of a chemical like that as a warfare agent.
Now, is this something that we need to monitor into the future? Say there were prolonged eruptions and perhaps the weather patterns were reasonably steady, bringing it over any populated area, I suppose. I mean, like, how is this affecting Icelandic people? Would they be impacted by it, for instance?
Yes, they are. And on their weather forecasts currently, they've obviously got these levels of sulfur dioxide that there is. But we have the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, which monitors it. And they saw this pulse, and they reported it on their Twitter. I think the main issue would be this, is that do others, like radio stations like yours, monitor the EPA Twitter on the air quality index in order to pass on very quickly to your own listeners, people who live in the area, that there might be something on, certainly to warn people like asthmatics.
Yeah, and this is a discussion you think should be happening. This is a this something that should be done.
Yeah, yes, and I think you, I mean, I'll pick you as your radio station, as you're asking, but I think you probably should assign somebody to monitor the EPA Twitter account that's on the air quality, and you might well see very, very quickly, because they're very good at saying it's poor, very poor quality, or good, on the whole, generally speaking, good.
Yes.
But if you were able to quickly get that information out, I think local radio stations are missing a trick here if they're not doing that.
Because we did see it was perhaps different circumstances that led to it. It seems rather rare, at least from my memory, but there was quality warnings across the UK a couple of months back, which does seem rather rare, but it's important information for those, particularly with respiratory problems, I presume.
Absolutely. The issue over the UK those few months ago was something that's a bit more akin to what we call a smog. That is, there was a vast build-up of particulate matter, very small particulate matter. Remember, sulfur dioxide is a gas. Particulate matter, though, has exactly the same type of effect if it gets down into the lungs. And when you've got weather conditions that keep things stable, as it was over London, then you get issues. We're a bit luckier over in Ireland because, to date anyway, we get rather more changeable conditions. So very often it's not stagnant for weeks.
So it's certainly worthwhile information and something we should definitely keep track on and keep in mind either collectively or individually.
Yes. The public themselves, of course, can particularly if they're asthmatics. And if you've got kids, which many people obviously have, can just quickly, I mean, if they have a phone that can and use Twitter, then they can find these things out for themselves. So I think increasingly, as we become more of a media savvy set of people in the world, but people should do that for themselves.
Professor, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for joining us on the programme.
And you, thank you very much.
And that was Professor John Sadhu speaking to us. Now, some of your requests. Please play for Kieran Morning and Nicola Hollick, who are getting married in Letterkenny today. Best wishes from Mary and John Lynch. For Jordan Lee McGee and Kilmacrennan, happy 14th birthday to you, Jordan, from Nanny and Grandad Doherty in Ashlawn. For my nephew Austin Gallagher and wife Anne and family who travelled from Australia for the Donegal match. This comes in from Uncle Oni, the wife Maura. It's not the wife. I don't know why I said the wife. I'll start that again. From Uncle Oni, wife Maura, and they're in Burton Port. And what a journey to undertake to support your team. And we know your journey is not going to be in vain. Hope you enjoy your stay at home as well while you are here. For my granddaughter, Rachel McCarran in Letterkenny, who's 12 today. Happy 12th birthday to you, Rachel. This comes in from Granny and Grandad in Ballylennon, Peter and Bernie. Now, a caller says, ladies, don't have handbags over your shoulders. My friend had hers cut off her shoulder last week in Dublin and she lost everything. That's some good advice, isn't it? These guys run around with sharp blades and they just cut the strap and run off with your bag. And if there's a few people around it before you know, they're away, 20, 30 people apart from you. Love the show. Thank you very much for a caller for phoning that in. Good luck to everyone taking part in the Massey World Record in Greenon Estate in Burt. The Massey World Record is okay. Now, that makes sense because I did pass a number of 135s coming up the road this morning. So that must be where they were heading. Caller points out that today, September 20th, 1992, we won our first All-Ireland against Dublin. Hard to believe it's so long ago. For Shania Gallagher Boner in Mondewy Manor, happy 6th birthday to you, Shania, from Daddy, Mummy and Brother Ryan. Another one in for you for Sharon Boner, Newtown. Actually, it's a different one. I beg your pardon. Two S. Boners, but this one's Sharon Boner in Newtown. Happy birthday to you from all your workmates. A request for Kieran Morning. We've done that one. Ellen Eileen McFadden and Anthony Ferry from Falkara, they're getting married today. This comes from John McFadden in Rye. To my niece Eileen McFadden and Anthony Ferry getting married today in Falkara. Best wishes, this time from Uncle Jimmy and Jean. And another one for Eileen and Anthony getting married, this time from Maria, Joe, Orla and Amy O'Donnell, who are wishing you two guys a lifetime of happiness. Now, Sergeant Paul Wallace gave out some 24-hour numbers for Garda stations, and we've had a couple of listeners who phoned in to see if we'd repeat those. This is the Garda 24 service, so you know, maybe your local station won't be open all the time, but if you need to contact the Gardaí in an emergency, you'll know which one's closest to you. So I'll read these out for you. Letterkenny, you can call 24/7 916 100. So you can call what I meant to say, 24 hours, 7 days a week. The telephone number is 916 7100. If you're in Milford, it's 91530600. If you're in Buncrana, 93205400. And in Ballyshannon, it's 071 98 511 02. And in the case of an absolute emergency, the numbers there for you are 999, as you know, and also 112. 25 minutes away from 12 o'clock. I can't believe the time has gone in so quick. You're tuned to the weekend edition here on Highland Radio, this and every Saturday with Greg Hughes, except next Saturday, actually. I'm away next Saturday, but I will be back with you on the programme the Saturday thereafter. OK, we'll be back more imminently after this break. Now, you're welcome back to the programme. Doctors are warning of the dangers of a pass-out challenge, as it's being described. These videos are then being shown online. I'm sure some of our older listeners would realise that these are trends that seem to come over the course of a number of years, then disappear and come back again. To discuss this, we're joined by Dr. Nick Flynn. Doctor, I'm at pains not to encourage or give anyone any ideas, so perhaps I'll defer to your professionalism in this regard, and perhaps as much as you want to explain as to what children are doing.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having us on. Absolutely. There seems to be a re-emergence. You're quite correct in saying that this isn't a new phenomenon of this game, which the kids are calling a game. It's not really, but they're calling it the pass-out challenge. Previously, it had been called the American Dream. Now, what they essentially are doing is preventing their lungs from working. So I don't really want to describe that to you, but they put pressure on each other's chests to stop themselves from breathing. So when they're doing this, it's like a mechanical pressure on the chest, which stops the lungs from getting oxygen. And in this situation, the lungs don't have oxygen, therefore the blood doesn't have oxygen, which in turn stops your brain getting oxygen. And this is a medical phenomenon known as brain hypoxia. And certainly can have complications, you know.
I have a strong memory from my own childhood of someone dying shortly after this was done to them. So it can have very serious and the ultimate consequence.
Absolutely, Greg. I mean, the complications would include, I mean, if you take what the kids themselves look upon at the end point, which is to produce a faint, and then in waking up, they feel that there is some kind of a phenomenon that's enjoyable in waking up from that faint. But this is very, very risky behavior. The kids are introducing themselves to an uncontrolled environment where they produce a faint through this lack of oxygen to their brain. But the other complications of lack of oxygen to your brain can include having a seizure, having a stroke, potentially brain damage. If there's lack of oxygen to your brain for over 3 minutes, it can result in permanent brain damage for the rest of your life. And in extreme cases, lack of oxygen for over 5 minutes can cause death. Now, what your listeners might want to consider compared to previous generations is that now we have social media. We'd all be aware during the summer there was a lot of momentum, a lot of popularity in people performing the ice bucket challenge. Children and adolescents maybe have been aware of their parents performing the challenge and sharing that on social media, and it was for a good cause. It was essentially safe, and there wasn't a lot of risk with it. But they may associate that with this, which they might think, oh, this is fun. It's not fun. It's very dangerous. Mm. But they're sharing it on their social media. And their social media includes media like Snapchat, which there's no evidence for.
Yes.
Parents might go to the phone looking for, or go to the tablet looking for, what's my kid up to? And then they might not see anything. But with this Snapchat form of social media, apparently there's no record.
Yeah, and through the generations, it's been driven at least in some part, if not totally, by peer pressure. That's only going to be aided by it going viral.
Absolutely, and I think you're dead right in your introduction that we want to be careful not to sensationalise it, we want to be careful not to describe how they're doing it. But the kids themselves, there are children doing it, there are adolescents doing it, there's no doubt. And as you say, they put pressure on each other to do it, and it becomes, I've done it, can you do it?
Yeah.
And we need to educate them that this isn't safe.
So it's a conversation then we need to be having with our children, isn't it?
Absolutely, but I would just add in one little thing extra, that like kids will be kids, and adolescents will be adolescents, and we have to acknowledge, even though it's not, may not be appropriate, but kids will be at teenage discos, they will be experimenting with alcohol, and unfortunately maybe entry-level drugs, and if you mix like taking alcohol or being intoxicated from cannabis with this activity, it could very easily be that somebody would press on somebody's chest for just that bit too long, and all of a sudden you have a very serious problem. Like, I mean, how scary would it be for a teenager to be at a disco, maybe in a quiet area that isn't supervised, and somebody has a seizure? Will they know what to do? I mean, if they've consumed alcohol, they may be disinhibited. They may not do the correct thing, which would be called for help.
And we do know, listen, sometimes there's the shock factor and they flee.
Yeah, absolutely, and which is worse again. I mean, somebody's left without any help. What I'd say to children is, if you compare what you're actually doing to your body here, it's comparable to drowning. It's comparable to choking. You're depriving your system for oxygen that it needs. And would you really allow somebody to hold you under the water for a couple of minutes or put their hands around your neck for a few minutes? You would not. Everybody instinctively, we know this is like, that's dangerous, it's wrong, we shouldn't do it. And so therefore, this activity, it's akin to that. It should be not strongly discouraged. It should be banned. It should stop before they start. It's very, very dangerous.
Yes, Doctor, and it's not necessarily the most pleasant of conversations to be having on a Saturday morning, but it's a conversation we need to have, and we can't bury our heads in the sand on this and wait for a tragedy or another tragedy to happen.
Absolutely, absolutely not. I was recently at a talk given by a lady called Maureen Griffin, who's a forensic psychologist who specialises in internet safety. And I encourage your listeners, if they have young kids, have teenagers in the house, take a look at Maureen's website. I don't know what it is, but there's lots of very practical advice there for how to keep our kids safe. Because really, the message with social media is that we're not the social media generation, the parents. It's the kids who are the social media generation, and they will run rings around us, and we need to be vigilant. And we have a duty of care to our kids as parents, but schools have as well, and so do people who run youth club discos or teenage discos. We need to bear in mind that these children need to be made aware of the problems that this activity could cause and the potential complications.
I mean, not least even when you hit the ground, so it's just something really want to avoid.
Well, actually, that you mentioned that there was a 15-year-old boy who died, unfortunately, in the US in 2012 from this activity when he was let fall onto the ground and he landed on a glass and he sustained a fatal cut to his neck and died from blood loss. I mean, it could be as simple as you could break your wrist, which obviously you will recover from, be very uncomfortable, or could be as serious as that.
Dr. Nick Flynn, thank you so much for helping us get the message out there.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate the call.
Patience, they can't build it.
Police in Glasgow struggled last night to control a mass pro-union rally after hundreds of demonstrators chanted "Rule Britannia," marching through the streets through the city centre in celebration of Scotland rejecting the independence. But it was somewhat unsavoury at times. It wasn't widely reported for one reason or another. But Grant joins us on the programme now. Grant, you walked into this, did you?
I certainly did.
Good morning to you, I suppose, in the first instance. What was it like? Hello. Because some of the pictures I was seeing on social media, and it has to be saying that it has to be said, not in mainstream media, looked very unpleasant.
Right. Well, what happened was I was posting a letter in St. Vincent Street, and I saw that there was something happening in George Square. And I thought, I'll have a look at that. There was smoke and fire engines. There were about 300 to 500 people waving Union Jacks. And it was quite a small demonstration, and there was quite a crowd of onlookers, some of whom were Yes supporters, young people mostly, and some tourists. And then I turned up and just sort of stand here and see what's going on. They were chanting "Rule Britannia," and there were some other incoherent songs that I didn't really recognise. I'm not into that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got very unpleasant on quite a few occasions. There was one bit of violence right beside me where a young lad popped up with a Yes, an A4-sized Yes poster. And they took it off it and broke it. And one very deranged fellow tried to have a fight with him. But to their credit, the unionists were holding him back.
Mm. I'm trying to be fair. I beg your pardon, Grant. I'm trying to be fair on this. I mean, is it possible that those thugs and, you know, people that just like a bit of aggro gate crash this, really? And, you know, and I mean, obviously it's going to be portrayed Yes versus No, unionism versus independence. But is it possible that this was a contingent of almost rent-a-crowd thugs?
Well, I was there for 3 hours and I spent quite some time talking to some of them. The impression I got as someone who was not involved in that sort of thing, there was various contingents from Drumchapel and places like that. They had it written on their Union Jacks.
Mm.
And they were there to... they basically behaved as if they had lost. That's the thing I found was so strange, was that they were actually acting as if they had lost the referendum.
And it's such a shame, isn't it? Because, you know, regardless of how you wanted the outcome to go, what did come out of it was a really powerful, strong, engaging debate about the future of Scotland, about people that are interested in the future of Scotland, regardless of its direction. And then we have this, which tarnishes that.
Well, it certainly tarnished Glasgow's image after the successes of the Commonwealth Games.
Mm, that's true.
People I spoke to said that it was disgusting and they were ashamed. One woman was on her way back to Germany and said that she had been thinking of moving back to Scotland, but this sort of thing was going to make sure that didn't happen. Can I just give you a couple of quotes of the things that people were actually saying? Do you want to hear that?
As long as it's not too strong, if you don't mind.
I'll miss out the worst of it.
Yeah.
I asked a man, I told him rather, that as I'm from the Highlands, effectively, and I said that we call the Union Jack the Butcher's Apron because of the what happened after Culloden. And he just screamed a rebel, a very obscene word after that in my face in front of TV cameras. And raged at me for quite a while. There were people screaming. Anyone that had a salt ire with them was called a traitor, and a very obscene word after that. They were screaming, the salt ire is already in the Union Jack. Don't you understand, you traitor? I've never heard this stuff before, and I've lived in Glasgow for 38 years.
Is there a concern that this could... sorry, Grant, is there a concern this could fester and that perhaps the peacefulness of this debate could end up going the other way?
Well, what I saw last night, it wasn't a riot. It was disorderly, and the police were trying to hold back, and they would move in and take people that were actually doing things. You saw people being taken away, and the police were nipping in and targeting people. There was a helicopter up above for a while. And the police were, the impression I got was they were just letting them blow off steam.
Mm.
And the demonstration, if you want to call it that, it was a nucleus of maybe 100 people by about 9 o'clock. And they were moving, they went from the southwest corner of George Square, and all of a sudden they moved up to the northwest corner, which is where Queen Street Station entrance is. And I presume that that's because there were people with salt tires or Yes supporters antagonizing them. What I saw was somebody trying to antagonize them. But I also saw people trying to engage with them and just being screamed at. And I'm talking about a very angry man being held back by his wife or girlfriend, screaming at abuse at a very small woman who eventually just walked away. And even after she'd walked away, the man was screaming at nobody for about 2 minutes.
Very unsafe.
I've never seen anything like this. It was like being trapped in a violent cartoon.
Grant, we appreciate. Unfortunately, go ahead very briefly, Grant, if you don't mind.
One more thing. I'm not involved in religion. I'm not a Christian or anything. So it's all alien to me. There was one man very close to me, screamed right over my shoulder at somebody with a salt tire, that you traitors need hung, drawn, and quartered, and that met with a cheer. Now, if this is 2014, I don't think we should be behaving like this.
Well, let's hope it was a once-off. It should never have happened in the first place. Grant, thanks for chatting us this Saturday morning.
I hope so.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. That was Grant, who was in St. George's Square last night. Okay, Border Lives is an exciting storytelling project that has produced 6 short films capturing people's lives and experiences along the border region between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. To discuss this, we are joined by Conor McGale. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme, Conor.
No problem, Greg.
Tell us a little bit more about this. It sounds like quite a bit of work has gone into it.
Yeah, it's a project that's nearly taken, I suppose, 2.5 years to come to fruition. It's a European Union Peace Treaty funded project, and essentially what we were tasked to do was to deliver 6 half-hour documentaries focusing on various aspects of the border, and particularly various geographical areas and that. So we've done quite a lot of research, and we held quite a lot of like open information evenings for people to come forward and be willing to tell their story.
And give us an idea of some of the stories that feature the border region here, say Derry, Tyrone, Donegal, Derry, Tyrone.
Sure, no worries. Well, there was 2 films done on the Donegal border. One was done in Rockfield, Ballyshannon area on the border of Fermanagh there, and the one that was shown in St. Johnson is the Overlagan. And that film had 16 people that participated in the film. And it talks specifically about people coming forward from the St. Johnson area, talking about what life was like on the border, both before the Troubles and during the Troubles. And it also talks then about people who would have travelled from St. Johnson into the north, either mainly to Derry, in order to purchase goods or to go shopping, et cetera, et cetera. We also have had a number of participants from Monray, Ulster Scots Heritage Centre there, and they talk particularly about the Protestant experience in the border region, and also particularly around the Ulster Scots participation. So we had quite a lot of people came forward from that area, which shows about the vibrancy of the area. Came forward to talk about a number of issues. They came forward to talk about smuggling. They came forward to talk about events that they witnessed in Derry. They came forward to talk about what Nova Customs Post going to and forward, and basically what life was like during that time.
It is interesting because there are a lot of untold stories, and it puts me in mind recently of the arson attack on an Orange Hall here in Newtown, Cunningham, and I spoke to a mother of a Protestant child whose life had changed as a result of that because things were being said to them at school, and it was a difficult period, and hopefully that's eased off now. But it goes to show that there is still an awful lot that we need to discuss and an awful lot we need to learn.
Well, absolutely. The history of Ireland shows that history repeats itself in this island quite a lot of the time. And I think what we're trying to do with particularly these films was we very much encouraged ordinary people to come forward to tell their story. We didn't want stories that were told previously or told by previous projects. This project was very much open and very much dictated to by the participants that came forward. We hadn't got an agenda as such. We just really didn't know whenever we started the cameras about what people were going to talk about, and there was nothing off limits as such.
And that's a nice organic approach, isn't it? Because you're not forcing an agenda. You are literally soaking up the views of people and what they want to discuss.
Absolutely. There's a whole two-way process about this, Greg, and particularly we were very interested in people to come forward, and in order to, that involved obviously a degree of trust building between people, and to help facilitate that trust, we had a number of meetings with participants whenever they agreed to come forward. And also, probably more importantly, about a project of this type, which maybe hadn't been involved previously with other types of media, whenever people came forward and we recorded their story, we went back to them to show them what their interview contained. So if there's anything that they weren't happy with, if there's anything they wanted to change, or if there's anything they want to omit, they can do that. So each participant in all of our on all of our six films, and particularly around St. Johnstone area, had full consent. So therefore, if there was something that they weren't happy with, they could have withdrawn from the project at any stage. And I think...
And it's a test. It's a testament to the project that they didn't. Unfortunately, we don't have the time to do this project justice. But perhaps you can tell us when people can or where they can see these documentary films.
Sure, no problem at all. Well, the film has been shown on Thursday night in St. Johnstone Family Resource Centre. It's been shown from 8:30. But from next Friday, all six films will be up live on our website. The website is borderlive.eu, and you can go and find the film and find a bit of background information on the project, as well as about the history of the border. And as well as that, we've got a Facebook and a Twitter feed that we constantly update about screenings that we're doing, other initiatives and other projects we're doing. So we'd encourage people that are interested in the project to get in contact with us via Facebook and Twitter, have a look at the film, and certainly, you know, keep in touch with the project. We'll be delighted to hear people's views on it.
Superb. I can't wait to check them out myself, Connor. Thank you for joining us on the programme this morning.
No problem at all, Greg. Thank you.